call to order the regular meeting of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, June 8th, 2017. First item I'd like is to approve tonight's agenda. Can I have a motion for the agenda?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
So we have a motion and a second. Any changes or comments to the agenda? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, next item on the agenda is approval of minutes for May 25th, 2017. They were just handed out and sent an email, so I'll give you all another minute to read over them. Motion and a second. Motion and a second. Any comments or changes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes say aye.
Aye.
Minutes are approved. It's unanimous. Next item on tonight's agenda is public comment on non-agenda items. Is there a member of the public who wishes to comment on something that is not on tonight's agenda?
Sure, I will.
Okay, please state your name and address for the record, please.
Michael Thomas, 1231 LaForest Drive, SC North Bend. I want to comment, actually, on my fellow citizens that came out on Tuesday at City Council to really speak out their piece against and in favor of reduced density development. It was amazing to see about 20 citizens come out and really speak to, you know, the changes they wanted to see in support of changing our density regulations. I'm sure as many of you know, the Valgrind development was quite controversial, and that item was brought up again through City Council. I think it's great to see citizen input. Hopefully you can see some more of it here, which would be great. But as we think about this, so as we start thinking about development in general, I urge folks to really take their time, listen to the public, and perhaps be tenacious and ask different questions of planning. For example, you know, I spend a lot of time researching, you know, infrastructure limits. And I would dispute some of the city's standing on sewer capacity. So, like, for example, maybe our plant has 12 to 14,000 people. That doesn't mean, though, that that's the only constraint that should be judging for sewer capacity. There are other kinds of limits, like the amount of solids you discharge into the river, ammonia, and other things. Another interesting one, and there's copies, and I won't give these to you, of discharge reports during the winter. North Bend, in November of 2015, on one day, discharged an extra 500,000 gallons of sewage that didn't appear to get proper treatment. The fecal coliform limits went up, so it's pretty evident that maybe we're discharging sewage into the river that didn't get treatment. And also, as we think about adding more development, until we address this problem of water inflow or infiltration and inflow, and maybe we should ask the city engineer about this, that maybe we don't have any sewer capacity left. Maybe it's negative. Maybe we're polluting the river as a result. So I urge you to really think about the infrastructure limits in the city. Ask tough questions, whether it's sewer, whether it's water, whether it's roads. Don't necessarily take the answers you get from city members or planning commission. Look for yourself. I've dug through tens of thousands of pages of DMR reports. Look for studies. Were fish kill studies done in November, or should they be done in August when the rivers are lowest? Things like that, that may be called to engineering reports that maybe should be done at different times. Maybe you get different results if you apply more stringent engineering. So anyway, I hope that you start looking for additional guidance when it comes to infrastructure limits, and don't always take the answers that come from the city. And here's 10 copies of those DMR reports.
Thank you. Is there anybody else that wishes to make a comment to the Planning Commission on something that's not on tonight's agenda? Seeing none. All right, the next item.
Sorry, I wasn't fast enough.
That's all right. Please state your name and address for the record.
Chris Donka, 4587 Southeast 137th Street in Wood River. Okay. So I'm not sure if this is on the agenda, but I believe that one of the things that the committee is talking about is proposed lowering CEPA thresholds to facilitate development.
That hasn't actually been introduced to the Planning Commission yet.
Okay. Well, I guess I just want to continue my comment real quickly, and I would just say that I hope that you guys would consider using SEPA standards as armor against massive development. If North Bend's brand is a rural, small town, outdoor destination, then I would think SEPA could be used as a lens for zoning and permitting decisions rather than not be regarded at all. That's what I know a bunch of people ran the 2015 election on, this wonderful outdoor brand. And I think that we're not realizing that, and lowering standards is further proof that we're not realizing that for our town.
So. Thank you. Anybody else that wishes to speak on something not on tonight's agenda? Okay, seeing none. Next item on our agenda is discussion and recommendations for the 2017 docket amendments to the Comprehensive Plan Land Use and Zoning Map. Note that docket 6, 8, and 10 related to the North Bend Zone will be deferred until June 22nd, following the CED committee recommendation. Planning Commission, since our last meeting where we had over 2.5 hours of public testimony, we barely got into our questions and before we ran out of time at the Senior Center. So first, want to offer the option, if you have any questions that you'd like to ask of staff or about any of the comments that we had publicly made, you can go ahead and do so now. If there are none, if you'd like to make a motion, then we can start our deliberations. While you're doing that, I'll just thank Mike Sippo, who's Public Works, your project manager, right?
Yes. And
so thank you for joining us this evening. Appreciate it. Thank you again for sitting through all our questions and helping us out. In public testimony, we did hear a little bit about INI. While the Planning Commission's kind of thinking about their questions on dockets, do you want to talk a little bit about what is being done or not done?
Well, I can't speak to the minute details of TMDLs, the maximum daily loads, but from a broader sense, what Michael talked about, so about 90% of the inflow, especially during the heavy winter months, is from INI. I know that our public works staff and also down at the treatment plant and our maintenance guys are working really hard at identifying those problems. We've recently purchased cameras that can go into those lines. So we're going out, finding some of the hot spots and getting those on the list to get repaired. That should really help with the INI concerns. As for...
Mike, before you go any further... No, I'm sorry, you can't. The city has known about INI for a period of time. Do you know how long that the city has had a known concern about it?
I can't. I've been here since January. I can't speak to before that, but
sure.
Just from the conversations that I've had with our city engineer and with the treatment plant guys, it's certainly, they've known about it a lot longer. It's definitely been, through the reports that Graham Osborne does, that we can see that a lot of the influence does come from the seepage, so to speak.
Sure. Curtis?
Could I get a reminder on what INI is?
In-ground infiltration.
Okay.
And so groundwater gets into the sewage pipes, and that creates an inflow problem where you have a higher than normal amount, where sometimes they double or more the capacity of what the normal range is.
And six times sometimes. Sorry.
Yes.
It's quite high.
So at a city council meeting, I don't have a good understanding, but I know before Mayor Hearing took office, the previous mayor had known about it. And I just want to thank our public works director, who seems to actually be, doing something about, number one, our aging sewer plant and our INI. So I have shared concerns with what's been voiced and raised, and I'm eagerly waiting for the updates and the progress to happen to our sewer plan. Pretty much, I'll leave it there, and you know, there's lots to, I guess, on the Public Works plans for updating of the plant where they can kind of review that, right? Mm-hmm. Where would they go to find out?
Oh, where would the, if somebody had questions about that, I would suggest going to the Public Works office and talking with our city engineer, Don Deberg. He's closest with the design of the new UV building, as well as doing the upgrades to the clarifiers and the systematic upgrades that we're expecting to do in the next few years.
Thanks. Okay, Planning Commission, dockets. Any questions for staff? Any questions about all the emails back and forth between myself and the Public Works Director?
I just wrote that up. That was good clarification.
Okay. So the first dockets we were talking about were dockets 2 and 3. Do you want to resume that or go back to docket number 1? How would the Planning Commission like to proceed? In order or 2 and 3?
I mean, we can come back to it, I guess, to 1, but we can also just go in order.
Yeah, we can do 2 and 3 and then go back and do 1 through the rest. Okay. Is there a motion to approve docket request number 2 to change zoning of 4 parcels in UGA from CLDR to LDR, and docket request number 3, 1 parcel UGA from CLDR to LDR?
I will make a motion to
approve.
Well, yes, as to approve as written, okay. As stated.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, and a second by Commissioner Heller. Who would like to begin? In our last discussion where we talked, there was a great deal to be said about where the properties are located, what the strategy is for growth in our city, that while they're in our urban growth boundary, they're not currently in our city yet. We heard a lot of concern about traffic, and I guess where I didn't really speak, I just want to kind of say my emails with our Public Works Director, Mark Rigos, were just about understanding how that impacts our downtown, where we're feeling a lot of this pain, and understanding the projects that are supposed to happen, but not having confidence in what we have already planned, if that will also aid in the additional growth that we're going to put on these intersections. To state it clearly, I said, you know, some days I drive 3 round trips past QFC. When you talk about a development that is pretty far out from downtown, Mike, can you tell me, is that part of the projections in the traffic study that's done? Do you take in account the grocery store, the schools, and the sporting fields of where those people will commute to?
Yes. The traffic studies, so they are done for the individual projects themselves. And usually if you have like a, let's just take for example, you like Chinook Lumber or River Run Apartments, they'll give out a distribution of trips that, and let's say the PM peak hour, you know, 45% of your trips are going to head, you know, left onto Cedar Falls Way and up towards the shopping areas. Another 15% are going to go towards the freeway. So they look at the different distributions. We also have our LOS study, which is...
Hold on. When you're talking about those distributions, is that like based upon some formula or plan? Is there... And how old is that? How does it apply to, you know, a small town like ours versus a Bellevue where you have many options, you know, for shopping and for services?
Yeah. I don't know the fine details of how the traffic engineers calculate those distribution models. I do know that our peer review traffic engineer you know, will oftentimes comment on it and say, hey, we don't believe that this is a growth pattern that matches the town. So, you know, adjust your trips accordingly.
So, Mike, and this is my comment to the Planning Commission, if I take into account Main View and Cedar Landing, when those two developments went in, that's when we had problems in front of QFC, and that's where it started getting hard with the roundabout and Maloney Grove intersections. And so to really think deeply, you know, as it relates to 2 and 3, I guess where I'm saying, you know, without additional studies, either my recommendation is table until we get our city to do the traffic studies, or we don't recommend, is my point of view.
A question. The traffic studies are typically done when a development is proposed. Is that correct?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. So it's one of those things where we're, you know, I have other concerns that have to do with roads, which I asked about, which is that there's not, we have a large area where these two particular properties that we've discussed are located that has essentially one way in, one way out. It's not a dual, there's not a backup if something happens to those access points to get people in and out of those areas safely. So that's a secondary concern, which I think is part of that, should be part of long-range planning. We've seen King County address this with a number of communities that have similar situations in recent years, primarily related to flooding or natural disaster, if we cut them off and isolate them. I don't want us to see us create that kind of situation where we have a huge density, and if there were a large fire or, as you said, a levee failure, we don't have a way to get people in and out. There's a secondary concern about just the traffic levels, which would be assessed or addressed in those studies that are done when the development is put together. So I'm kind of going the same direction you are in terms of that this may not be the time to do it, but I have a different concern. You know, the traffic studies get handled. I'm more concerned about this overall issue of public safety and what it means to continue building density in certain areas when we know that there's only one way in, no one way out.
Good point.
It's the same road.
Good point.
And a narrow road at that in some places. Mm-hmm. So it's not ideally suited to be able to move people quickly.
Mm-hmm. I have a question.
Yes.
I just recently completed, as part of the crew for John Day's company, I did traffic control there for the last 5 weeks. And we just completed the lanes, the left-hand turn lanes you saw on North Bend Way. And I know, Gary, you've passed me a few times. one of my thoughts is that after the completion, which I think was done well, there's a street across by the ranger station that has a harder access to get out now. So that's what I'm concerned about, too, is what the future holds. Now that we've got part of it done, we still have an issue in front of us as we move and get people more closer to town coming and flowing from. There's got to be some thoughts, a very particular, very concerned thought before we move forward, in my judgment. Mm-hmm. It's important to take time. Mm-hmm.
So before somebody jumps in, I have a question for Mike on that. In King County roads and other city standards, there are roads that don't have driveways that come across them. I don't remember in our road standards, do we have a road that doesn't have driveways connecting to it? You know what I'm talking about? So it's a street that basically you're not having a single residence on it. And where Mary's talking about, I also have that concern because we do have single-family residences on this road where we're putting the majority of the traffic. Mm-hmm. So how are we, you know, going to, I guess, target that, or how do we have the developers mitigate for them to get on the road where we're creating roundabouts and other intersections for everyone else, but they still have to contend with the 10 cars that are backed up?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, certainly in the King County road standards, which we do model, especially like site distance safety issues off of, is something that is looked at when these roundabouts are designed. Prevailing speed, if you do have an existing driveway situation, oftentimes, you know, especially when things were built way back when, these things weren't considered. And we as a city, you know, even if we do make a public improvement, don't have the right just go in and say, hey, we're taking away your driveway, you have to move it to this street. It's grandfathered in, so to speak. So there is a balance between safety and property rights. And we do try to plan around that as much as possible. But once again, we don't always have the authority to enforce an existing driveway to move or to relocate.
Sure. Well, I just didn't know if, like, any site improvements are made or, you know, different concessions or, you know, an alleyway or something is improved.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as much as feasibly possible is usually done. You know, we'll, like I said, we'll look at site distance triangles if, you know, if we do see there is a driveway, you know, and we move traffic closer to it, so to speak, we'll make sure that, you know, that driveway still has the timing ability to make the turn out of there.
Mm-hmm. And if it's a major project or a new project, then we have the authority to require them to move it, I mean, at that point. But if it's an existing residence, we have to kind of work under what we have. And then our code does have, as you guys know, that the properties between Cedar Falls Way and North Bend Way, that the preference is obviously Cedar Falls Way. The area you're talking about, there's some single family homes and they don't have that access to go to Cedar Falls instead.
It's kind of a tricky area.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the ranger station with that kind of parking area. I've watched many people, not just two or three, scoot through, cut through the parking lot that was empty, or maybe had a car there, and then skip down Thrasher.
Mm.
Super dangerous.
Right.
But these are concerns I have. It's a very complicated area anyway.
Right. So. Yeah, the ranger station parking,
So I guess the question would be, with the cottages that are going back there, shouldn't that have been part of the traffic study? And if it was missed, then how are we going to have more confidence in future traffic studies? Like, things as simple as that, is that it's the main way in off the busiest street, and so how is that being made as safe, as, you know, to the expectations we have?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, what she's speaking to is obviously illegal behavior. That's something that's difficult to predict. You know, when I do know a little bit of the history about when that left turn pocket was designed to be put in, there also wasn't a lot of the pipeline projects. There wasn't a whole lot happening in town when that ranger station went in.
Mm-hmm.
If it had gone in now, it probably would have been held to a lot higher level of standard, but they were vested into their application at that time. So to answer your question, similar projects are... We now have enough data from all these things happening around that we're putting together a full LOS study for the intersections in the city, for the major intersections, that we can say, you know, not just one project, but here's 15 projects going on at the same time, what needs to happen at these intersections to make them safer.
So is that what you're working on, that will go through December?
Yes.
Okay. Does that help, Mary?
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate the information always.
Scott?
Yeah, as I stated at the end of the last meeting, I think that we should just leave this property as it is. It was recently recommended to ultimately put in this CLDR. I think it fits the rural character, it fits the city's vision. And it doesn't change anything right now. That they're just going to affect if it was annexed. So I think it's a lot of acreage. It's a lot of acreage to change. So, a lot more homes that would go in there. And from what I look at the comments and I listen to people, some people want more development.
Okay. Any further discussion?
No, I think I'll just kind of. I agree with a lot of what you're saying, Scott. I see the other side as well. I see, you know, a property owner whose property rights might, maybe in their opinion, might have been, infringed on. And, and I think that's an issue. However, I don't, I feel like the good of, the larger good is something that we need to consider and prioritize. And, considering the location, considering what we're trying to promote and our goal. And I guess it, like, an impression I have that I'm stuck with is, you know, the new development, the Pulte, the River Glen. It was my understanding, I guess it was an incorrect assumption, that the new requirements that we had as far as setbacks and distance between would be applied there. And I'm greatly disappointed that that was vested beforehand. And so I'm so reluctant to approve any higher densities before we really get it right. And so, yeah, that's just kind of the taste that's left in my mouth right now, and before I'm willing to really see or support higher density areas, I think, to make sure that we're considering everything, whether it's tree retention and mature tree retention and traffic studies and, you know, and all these things that we're talking about. So just thoughts that I'm mulling over.
Good comment. The other thing to consider is just the zoning of the city as a whole and what we have in the pipeline and what we don't have. And, you know, our greater needs are the neighborhood business, the higher density, and, you know, we have, I don't know, in the last buildable lands report, it was something like 600 permits that were LDR. And so would those four homes break, or what we don't have is the traditional North Home building?
You know, traditional?
Larger lot, the quarter, or larger than a quarter acre. So, are you ready for the question? Okay. The motion before you is to approve docket request number 2, a zoning of 4 parcels in UGA from CLDR to LDR, and docket request number 3, zoning 1 parcel in UGA from CLDR to LDR. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Nay.
Motion fails. Okay. Next item is docket request number 1, which is to change the zoning of 13 parcels from LDR to HDR. Applicant is John Rauches. Okay. Who would like to begin our discussion?
More of just kind of a comment than questions or anything. You know, I think a lot of the concerns that were raised here tonight centered around the same concerns we had for dockets 2 and 3 as far as traffic. Especially considering the location of this, and that just being such a difference maker in the immediate radius of it. Something else that stood out for me was the applicant, if that's the correct word, has expressed no interest or follow-up in this. I heard a resounding lack of support for it at the public meeting, and
so are you ready for a motion? We can start our discussion. Can I get a motion for docket request number 1 to change the zoning of 13 parcels from LDR to HDR?
So moved.
Motion by Commissioner Heller and a second. Second by Commissioner Gildersleeve. One thing I do like about this thought is that the HDR is centered right in our downtown, promotes the walkability of the city, and you have the advantage of North Bend Way and Cedar Falls on either side. And so you have quite the mobility factor. It's walking distance to downtown, it's walking distance to the transit center. You know, it does have walking distance to parks. It is all about creating a vibrant downtown. One thing I think about when I make the decision is how soon this would take effect. And, you know, generally it's 10 years down the road. I don't know if that's too soon, but I think about, I don't know, question for staff, when is our city hall expected to be built?
About 2 years or less?
2 years. So in 2 years, that will stretch the downtown out further, and that will be on the eastern side of this property. And so no one is required to sell, No one's required to make a change, but it does make it known in 10 years from now that that might be the direction we go. So, any other comments?
If I could kind of, in response to that.
Yeah, if there's no one else that wants to go, definitely. Go ahead.
I agree with that. And at the same time, I don't feel like now is necessarily time. I feel like in 10 years, if that's, you know, a need, then let's get this docket back in here.
Well, the one thing I want to keep in the Planning Commission's mind is the first thing that gets developed is residential. The next thing that gets developed is commercial and high density. So where you could have a residential property developed, you will not have higher density developed on existing lots until all the other vacant lots are going to be built up. I want to kind of set the tone where we want growth, where it should be directed to. And I also like it that it's on the north-south side of North Bend Way, where you're not blocking a view of the mountain.
I think that my concern with it is that we have a lot of moving targets right now with regard to what we're allowing in specific zones. You know, down to this long project on Cottage that we still have in the works. And what is allowed right now in high-density residential may be changing, and right now might allow things that we don't necessarily think should be there. So until we have that part sorted, I don't know that we should be making changes to zoning in that area.
Okay.
I don't want to end up with a giant cluster of, you know, detached condos or something stuck in there if they can manage to get away with it.
I guess question for staff, any insight into any changes to HDR?
Well, no, but, you know, like you alluded to, there's a lot of balls in the air right now and a lot of changes happening. And, you know, right now the development there is single family, you know, a little bit larger lots, and those people have been there a while, and they're probably going to be there in a while, too. So
I'm just thinking that we may be a little bit ahead of it. This is something that, you know, after we get all these various things in front of us sorted in terms of what we want these different zones to look like at. Maybe if that docket came back, that might be more all for it. But at the moment, I'm kind of not there.
Yeah, I thought the input at the meeting was really great. I mean, great residents here that really thought about future, about this area.
Okay. Anybody else?
Well, I think that's part of the point, is that we have to think about the future.
Mm-hmm.
The now is so prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things going on now. But, and I'm inclined to agree with you, yet I hear your points as well. So somewhere down the line, maybe 2-3 years, I don't even have the number yet. But right now, my guess is to just calmly see what comes our way, what the traffic reports say, what else
mm-hmm.
is coming. So have more of a conclusive decision making at that point
mm-hmm.
for me. Thank you, by the way, for all the mm-hmm. commentary.
A year from now, this talk, it might be a completely different thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
I guess for me, I agree with waiting a little bit. I mean, for me, I think it would probably be more than a year, but someone at the last meeting just said, you know, let's wait until things kind of settle out after these 800 plus homes, or even just some of the developments that are under construction or have been recently completed, and just see how the town changes, and just kind of monitor that. And I know it's maybe a placeholder, but it's like, it's just, things could change quickly, and what if that gets built out like faster than we think? I mean, I have no idea. Someone offers that whole block, run a nice price, and there it goes. So I think if we're going to change it, we should be ready for that change to happen.
Any other comments? Any other statements? Seeing none.
Are you taking public comments?
No. Public comment was at our last meeting. Thank you for asking. All those in favor of approving docket request number 1 to change the zoning of 13 parcels from LDR to HDR, say aye. All those opposed, say no.
No. No.
Motion fails. Okay, next item is docket request number 4, which is to amend EP1 zone to allow car washes. Do I have a motion to approve docket request number 4?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, Commissioner Bontrap. And a second? And a second by Commissioner Miller. Discussion.
I guess employment park. When I think of employment park, I guess I think of employment, and I'm just curious on, I think it's an automated car wash and how many employees it would be.
Well, I don't know what type of car wash it is, but you're right on your assumption, and where I kind of agree with you, it's employment park. So
I guess it's just a couple thoughts I'll just put out there. Mm-hmm. There is the zoning. And I think when we make a change like that, it changes the whole zone, which kind of makes me a little uncomfortable to do it kind of for one property. It is right across from the new cottage community. It looks like there is no road out on North Bend Way, so I mean it might be buffered a little bit. But then there's Delgren property, so there are residences that will be nearby. And I guess in general, I always think of car washes more. I don't know, like on the outskirts of town, like maybe the IC or the IMU, kind of those areas, mm-hmm. maybe near gas stations and not where that's proposed. So.
Okay.
Kind of a few thoughts.
Good comments. Anybody else?
Share a couple comments. I had some similar concerns hearing from the applicant. I felt like that a lot of those concerns were kind of dispelled. At least as it applies to this one, I felt like the noise, the surrounding impact was going to be more minimal than at least what I had concerns about. And kind of looking at that general area, hearing from the neighbors and their support for it, that helped me. Also kind of seeing this, looking to kind of not have it, somewhere in the middle of town, but more on the outskirts. And hopefully this is looking to promote that, that neighborhood business area. Zone, so it's certainly an area that's lacking in businesses, and I think anything we can do to kind of support small business certainly fits with some of the goals that we have. One concern that I had is just kind of the runoff, the water use, and learning about the requirements for retaining that on site and treating that on site helped me to. Be a little bit more supportive of that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to mimic Curtis's last comment. In fact, that was a deal breaker for me, is to understand where those waters are going to and fro. I think it's a need that we really will have as we grow.
Well, I kind of find myself with Scott in employment zone. In trying to find some really good wage jobs that end up in our town where that's not going to happen for a while. I understand that, but to preserve the zoning so that when it does come, we do have the land available, that there is minimal land in King County for that. And so hopefully that eventually we'll get that, I guess, employment parks, you know, to give some jobs to our community. On the other side of that, my dad was a small business owner and, you know, would hate for a regulation to be in the way of just trying to create a business. So, any further comment? You ready for the question? Okay. Motion before you is to approve docket request number 4, amending EP1 zone to allow car washes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Motion is approved. It is 3-1 with one abstention. Okay, so just we're not doing 6, 8, and 10. Okay, so the next one is docket request number 5, which is to rezone LDR property to multifamily. And this is from the city of North Bend. And docket request number 5 is on the opposite side of North Bend Way and going in front of Thrasher. And we had heard from the property owner for last two seasons or three seasons of docket requests, and we also heard from him at the last meeting. I've spoken on this in the past. I've approved it in the past. So I'm interested to hear what this Planning Commission thinks.
Seen that, and I guess I can justify it to a degree based on its location. That's probably the argument you have for changing it. But why would you not include those parcels going north?
That's our option.
I'm not recommending that, but I just think that some of these, just before I came in, the comprehensive plan was kind of looked at and like an overhaul done. And so it gets challenging when I feel like there should be a vision and some integrity kept with it, but I know that change is real and we should allow for change. But to do
so
kind of small one-off changes,
Elizabeth, you want to say?
A little bit of context on this is that one of the reasons that that strip that you see, many of the property owners in there have absolutely no interest and have spoken previously, because one of the overlays would have pushed it in through there. They do not have property owners in the area that is indicated on 5 have repeatedly requested this. So in many respects, this is the council responding to what the property owners in the area have interest in.
Well said.
And just to clarify, you're talking about all the properties along Thrasher, the LDR zoned properties along Thrasher.
Thank you. Yeah. I always forget we need some people. We don't have video for them to know what I'm talking about.
I think in general it's a smaller section than the other island the docket request wants, so you have to do a little test piece and it's a lot less effective. It wasn't made up, for example.
Mm-hmm. So. Appreciate that. Mary, any comments?
I think what you just informed me about is more clarifying. And since I was working in that area, I've been able to see a lot of, and actually meet the owners and their challenges of living there as it is right now. So that's very helpful information for me in my decision making.
Curtis?
I see that this one makes sense. It's something that they've requested. I just see this fitting in more than some of the other requests.
What I like about it, and you take into account the location, and I've spoke about this when we passed our comprehensive plan with the land use, is the demographics of our city, where we have a lot in the 35 bracket, but we also have a big chunk at the 55 bracket. In 10 years' time, when they start retiring, and if they want to age in place, which is what we talked about, we don't have the beds and the places for them to do that. This location provides senior housing opportunities in a great downtown walkable location. That's why I think it really makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I've commented on that before, that we're seeing many of our older residents that have lived in the valley for the bulk of their lives, if not all of their lives, that are having to move elsewhere to find housing that will accommodate when they can no longer maintain their homes, or the isolation of being, you know, out in Riverbend, for example. And providing this in an area that they can walk to the store. I already see it with people that live at Red Oak, which is in that general vicinity, that they can walk to QFC. They can go walk in the park. They can feel like they still have an active life style, which they would, right now we simply don't have enough of that, not when it's basically Red Oak, for people that are not in need of the care that takes place in the transitional center.
Right. We need something else. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other comment or changes? I'll just say, Scott, I agree 100% that we are the Planning Commission. We have to take our knowledge and our expertise and apply that for a thoughtful zone for the city that meets the needs of all the citizens. And if it was mine to do again, I would have zoned that entire corner. So, the motion before us for docket number five. Or docket number six, sorry. No,
docket five.
Yes.
And I think we need a motion.
I thought we had one. It was.
I didn't write one down.
I made the
unless
last
I
motion,
missed it.
But that wasn't for this.
Right. I didn't have a motion yet.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
Docket number five to rezone LDR property and multifamily.
So.
And a second.
Second.
Okay. Motion by Commissioner Gildersleeve and a second by Commissioner Miller. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving docket request number five to rezone LDR property to multifamily, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is approved. It is unanimous. Okay, docket number six is being skipped. Docket number seven, amend North Bend street standards. From the City of North Bend. Mr. Sippo.
Wake up.
When we talk about traffic capacity, and in December you said, well, you know what, that crazy thing that Commissioner Ryan said about making North Bend Way going east and Cedar Falls going west, makes complete sense if we want to adhere to our traffic standards. You know, how many lanes of traffic do we want, and would we hurt ourselves by approving a center divider at this point, I guess, until we have the data?
Be a little more specific on the road, the section that you're for the center divider.
I'm thinking North Bendway.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, we're not on one.
No, yeah.
Just want to make sure we're...
Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. So on 140th is one thing, but on North Bend Way, I'm thinking if we're going to improve 140th, how does that impact our main thoroughfares and our gateways? So.
Okay, so your first question has to do with putting in a center divider with left turn pockets and how traffic circulation works in that regards. There is a little challenge when you put in the center dividers, of course, for left turn movements, especially if you talk between 140 to 468. So you got to think of how many businesses, those are going to be the likely sources of people with commercial dragways that come off of North Bend Way. So when you do put in the center divider, that eliminates that left turn. That can create challenges accessing businesses. Usually where there's an intersection with residential or with a street, you'll have that left turn pocket and the divider will go away. As, I guess, the second part of your question is, well, how does that actually affect traffic overall? In my experience, center dividers don't really affect traffic. They just affect very specific movements. And can be a little more annoying for people to have to drive, a few hundred yards out of their way to turn around or do something like that. But as traffic goes, I don't believe it has an impact.
The movement, I guess, it promotes, kind of outweighs the downturn, right? Because you can speed up the flow one way by doing that roundabout or whatever. Commissioner Gildersleeve.
Center divider. There is a hate-hate relationship. People don't like them. The other thing is when we talk about going out further on, and while I get kind of the idea of having this island of safety for people trying to dash across the road, maybe, it basically stretches out the urban feel. And the whole idea, I think, of using the biochannel idea along that area is about trying to mimic the feel of a rural area while applying a modern standard to it. I heard island and I just went, I've heard that one for a long time. People still want the islands to come out over here. That comes up frequently.
They will get more. They will get more.
I know they're going to get more. But I'd like to see us keep it in the area that's more dense and has that kind of traffic and a greater density of people while, as we talk about our gateways and maintaining this rural character of the area, I don't think islands are consistent with that. Mm-hmm. The idea of using these biochannels in the walkways, as we saw the examples, is kind of a compromise to be able to address that. And honestly, I think it also preserves that property for the potential to have to widen the road down the many years out.
We could only do so, though, if there's an easement.
Right.
Or eminent domain.
Or dedication.
Yeah, dedication. sorry.
I was just curious. I've seen some places like a middle lane that's for turning, I think it's either direction is what it is. So as you're traveling down, so with adding in these sidewalks and bike lanes and bike channels, whatever is proposed, would there still be room to create like a middle lane in the future? There'd be the space for that. So I don't know what would be best. And I don't know if there'd be room even to do like a four lane through there. I'm assuming not. So if there was a middle lane, at least, I don't think we're going to get by with just one direction for the rest of the time. So I guess maybe you've already thought of that, but I wouldn't want to propose something and say, oh, sorry, we got this stuff here now. So
I don't know if you guys know this. So the two lots that are available that are zoned EP1 or EP2, they, I thought, were supposed to go off of 468th and North Bend Way. Do you know if they're allowed to go onto Southeast 140th? I thought that the plan was to have their model.
You're talking at the end.
Right, on the opposite side of Wood River, which is along the 140th.
Right.
So, when I'm thinking about it, it just occurred to me, I don't know if those industrial properties can actually go on to Southeast 140th, where we're talking about that concern of that divider strip. So
One thing we are looking at is providing off the roundabout at the 140 at 468 is providing stubs for those commercials to connect into so that any trucks or whatever they would have wouldn't come straight out of one onto 140th and then into the roundabout. They would instead go straight into the roundabout and back on the 468.
So if the Planning Commission would permit me to go again, the other thing that I want the commission to be mindful of is there's a school and a future elementary school to be put there. And so when you're talking about pulling international truck or, you know, national truck drivers, they're in the same path that school kids walk. You already have workers from the Terex plant that are walking along those same trails. Now you're having, and you've had for some time, truck drivers that get out and be healthy and walk around those same trails. So you're integrating adults and school children walking. I don't know if that's mindful or not. I just want to raise that up. When you're talking about drawing traffic there, there's another street that you could think about a roundabout that's, what is that called? It's closer to the interstate.
This one? He's talking about
144th.
Yeah, it's right where the gas station is. Where
cutting across the pink parcels there?
Where the mine is.
Over Cadman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, they're supposed to put a traffic light in there.
They are. And that was a part of Cadman's SEPA conditions from their project. Of course, that SEPA went through King County. Cadman's not located in city property. We are actually looking at, because of the King County loop facility going in there, we're looking at how the impacts of that intersection are going to occur and if Cadman is going to actually trigger that signalization. It's tough to tell right at this moment. We're digging up some of those old documents, and I know Cadman purchased the equipment and they put in the poles for it, but they haven't put on the signal
yet. So the other concern is the development of the Middle Fork, and citizen traffic counts have already counted over 300 cars on one day just at Mailbox Peak. And that equaled the total monthly amount that the Forest Service projected for the Middle Fork for 2023. Those projections are way off, right? So we do see, and being somebody who's working on with the Mountains of Sound Greenway, we have worked with transit to get shuttle buses to help offset some of that traffic flow. But you're still going to have an inflow of people and campers and that kind of activity. So when you're talking about Southeast 140th and 468th, you're creating quite a focal point for that recreation destination of our city. At the same point, there's a middle school and pretty soon a elementary school to be built there. So you have that. And then you have a mine. You have only truck stop in King County. You have employment park zoned. So thinking about just the street standard is to think about everything that's going to be using those streets and how they interact, and why I talk about being a resident of that area and what my experience has been, because I want that planning commissioner to know it's not just one person walking, it's all these businesses that everybody wants to get out and be healthy and walk. And so creating trails and spaces is a great thing so people can do that safely. Other comments?
Just a interesting part of, for me, I guess, you know, maybe as the town grows out, it'll make sense to have all these trails right in there, but we'd have the Tanner Trail on the south side, we'd have a sidewalk on the north side, and then we have the Snoqualmie Valley Trail. Maybe that will make sense and be really nice once everything's built out, but right now it would seem odd to have all of that going on there. But
I disagree in all my methodology of planning, you know, to think about what I've seen planned out from trails that go all the way down the Middle Fork, all the way connecting through to Snoqualmie, and you can ride that on a trail. And to put it down on paper now, so it's that's the development that you're going
right.
to do as it
grows. I think it is forward thinking, so in general, I think I do like it.
The interconnectivity of all of this is really important, and we need to not lose the opportunities.
Yeah, the trail to nowhere.
Well, and I think that you make a good point, which is that some of it is their employees at the local businesses that are trying to get out and walk. We have kids that are walking to school, and providing pathways that are safe for them to use, particularly in an area of heavy traffic, commercial traffic, becomes, I think, more important in that area. And at the same time, it becomes part of that interconnectivity to all of these great trails that we have through the area.
So with, I guess the trail system, does that fall under the Parks Department standards, or is that in our road standards where we're treating them alongside the roads?
If it's alongside the road and in the right-of-way, our street standard usually accommodates that, and then we have a trail standard in our trail section that is how the width of it and how it's built, but it's also mimicked in the street standard.
I think the Planning Commission, when we did our parks update, talked about markers or something alongside, you know, every so often in a trail, so that if there was a need for assistance, you could give a location or proximity on that trail. So if these are in our street standards, how do we adopt that same kind of methodology, that if you're creating a trail system, that there are some markers or some designations, so if you needed assistance, you can give that guidance?
Yeah, we could look into that. And see where it fits best in the code so that we could catch it. Yeah, it's 1725 in our code is trails, and then 1905 is streets.
So in general, the Southeast 140th is designed to promote that and retain that rural character before more development happens, right? It's learning from our lessons and doing that. I wouldn't want to go on any narrower travel lanes when you think about trucks with trailers that are 30 feet long and their mirrors that stick out 12 feet. So, yeah.
Object lesson. They sometimes scrape against other cars when you're just trying to pass
the 9 foot. Yeah, there's no shoulder.
The question I have is about lighting. Like, would there be lights installed along that trail? I'm not asking for them.
Generally, lights are installed at intersections only, right?
Correct.
And if they are city lights, then they would have to conform to the light standards.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like the lights by QFC that we talked about, the ones that are not cut off at all, they're just round globes. We're not putting those in anymore.
Right. We're not, and a lot of those now have the deflector. But yes, we've gone away generally from the globe, except in the historic downtown. I think generally we've decided to keep it there. But like the Bartell, the black that's downlit,
they're cool.
That would be the, yeah.
I just had a question. So looking on page, in docket 7, page 3.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what I just need help understanding is looking at this diagram, seeing that the trail, which I very much like the idea of, is on the south side of that road, and being slightly familiar, but not as familiar as others, help me to understand why that's a good idea. It seems like the majority of the residences are on the north side of the road. The new school, I mean, the middle school is accessed on the north side of 140 and 140. So that would seem to create two, like one crosswalk to access the trail and another crosswalk to get to the intended destination, which it would just seem to make more sense to be on the north side of the road. That way there's no crossing.
This isn't the section in front of the middle school.
It's no, but on 140th.
Right.
There is a traditional sidewalk on the north side.
Okay.
The trail's just on the south side. So on the north side, you got your planter strip and sidewalk. On the south side is where you have your meandering trail. So the kids will still be able to get straight to school using the traditional sidewalk.
Okay.
It's going to be more of the recreational users on the south side. That
but even they will have to across a couple times to get back to the Snoqualmie Valley Trail, assuming that that's going to be an intended connector or the Middle Fork Road. Would it make more sense to just let?
I think part of the reason the south side was identified for more, there are more trees, existing significant trees that are right now up against the road. So we hated to, we wanted to maintain that buffer with some of the EP uses that are on the south side. And not cut down all those trees that are there. There aren't, I mean, there's pockets on the north side where there are some big, nice trees. But there is a potential to save more trees and put the burden on the industrial land to have more of that buffering and that transitional landscape area that's there anyways for the south side.
That's a 50-foot buffer, what you're referring to, right? Just real quick, I'm sorry. It seems like you're thinking about something. If I can jump in?
Yeah.
I'm looking at the drawing Curtis referred to, and I can't read the descriptions. Is anybody, Jamie or Mike, can you give us a rundown?
Yeah, they actually showed up better on my, since this is a copy. So starting on the left.
Yeah, the north.
The left, it's a 5-foot sidewalk, 6-foot landscape strip under that tree, and then a 5-foot bike lane. And then you have your two 11-foot travel lanes. You have another 5-foot bike lane. And then it's the 8 to 10 biochannel or significant tree preservation as necessary.
And the 8-foot
Eight-foot meandering asphalt trail.
Now I can see it. That helps.
Amazing.
Because that's what, yeah. When Kurt, you said sidewalk, I was like, I thought there was one, but I couldn't
read
it.
Right. Yeah, so. Sorry about that.
No, that helps. Is everybody clear now?
Yes, just one final thought suggestion. Would it make sense? I mean, that totally makes sense, so thank you. At the same time, like, wanting that to be safely accessible, would it make sense to include wording as to the type of crosswalk? Similar to the one that we have across from the explosion site to the Mountside Apartments.
A lighted one?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we haven't gotten our transportation element, but along your lines, my request is that any road that has a speed limit 35 or higher have a lighted crosswalk, a flashing crosswalk.
I'll link to that.
Yeah.
Are you thinking about a specific crossing location?
Familiar with it, but like, I guess my wonder is, does it make sense to include it in, you know, what we,
right,
in our proposal,
okay,
a specific type of crosswalk?
So if the sidewalk's on the north side, you could come from the school all along Wood River, and you could get into Wood River from there, or to Tanner Wood, or to, what's the one behind Wood River? I can't remember. Anyway.
So will be.
Miner's Ridge.
So that's all the main residences. Across from Tanner Wood, there are maybe 15 homes.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere there's a private road, and that's where I would think would be a good place for a crosswalk, but it's to a private road, and I don't know what our future plans are on that. But to me, it would be someplace where the kids would be walking and have a place to go across.
And my thought there was, it's a pretty windy road. A few times I've been there, people seem to like to go fast.
Mm-hmm. So 35 is fast on
exactly. You know, so having some type of flashing light that around the corner somebody's crossing as an indicator might just make a little more sense for that area.
Mike, you might know, are some of those decisions made with the traffic study, the level of crossing, if it's a speed table or a lighted or a...
Yeah, so that's something that could certainly be looked into. You know, that might be something that we may want to propose to put onto our transportation project, especially as we see a need for that to happen.
We have talked about the trail that runs across North Bend Way, total separate discussion, but...
Yes. We just met on that last week.
Awesome.
I mean, if this isn't something that we need to, you know, include wearing it in here, because that's fine. And you can,
I think it matters. It's just, yeah, getting the right location, and I would have to defer to the experts to figure out where that is. So I think it's relevant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just trying to get the numbers correct here, because I'm seeing the drawing, and then I'm seeing some of the writing. The language in there talks about a 13-foot bio channel.
So just to clarify, we have two things going on. You have North Bend Way is what you're looking at in the table, and the diagram on the last page is Southeast 140th. So this docket contains kind of two street issues. The 140th Street section has was developed with one of our applications that came in, and this is the depiction of what we've developed to help. We're going to be doing that hopefully with the North Bend Way too. Pictures, 1,000 words. So if we can put these pictures for each street standard. But the North Bend Way change is the increase of the biochannel landscape strips from 10 to 13. So that's the change you see in the table with some other clarifications.
So, yeah. Scott, if it's easier for discussion, if we stick to 140th, then we come to North Bend Way, or, you know, we can go to North Bend Way now. I think to talk about one at a time.
Yeah, the 140th, I think, makes sense for you, what you were saying. I guess I had some questions on North Bend Way. Concerning the sidewalk on the north side, I'm thinking that there would not be enough room where the river comes in really close near Southeast Tanner Road. So I think we've talked about having a crosswalk or something there where the Snoqualmie Valley Trail ends.
Yes.
So they would have to cross over and then get on the Tanner Trail.
Yes.
And then there would be another crosswalk to get back on the sidewalk.
Yes. Yeah, I don't really see any way. There is going to be no development there. There's no property. So I don't think this really applies, nor would you even have space for it. So, but yeah, you would have to, unless you're going to just risk it on your own to stay on that side, which when we were out there meeting with King County, people were doing it. Mm-hmm. But you will have to go kind of a bit of a zigzag. They're also looking at maybe a bridge, pedestrian bridge over. So it's just too early to say. But something.
I haven't thought of the details that I just talked about. But my other thing is I've driven down, past Southeast Tanner Road at North Bend Way and kind of looked at that north side. It's kind of a ditch right now. It's basically a drainage ditch. I'd just be curious how you put a sidewalk in there and what it's easy to read the stuff on paper and say, oh, yeah, sidewalks can go in there.
Right.
But you have
where the storage facility is right now?
Yeah, kind of in there. So I don't know if that kind of that swale exists the whole way, but in that particular area, it's the topography is strange for a sidewalk right there.
Right.
So you have the road, and then you have the road, then the bio channel, the landscape strip, and then sidewalk.
Yeah.
So I guess if you left that natural, maybe you could leave it.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. We'd have to look at it a little more closely, but the it's definitely does that now. If it were a total redevelopment, you know, the burden's on the applicant to do the frontage, so they potentially have to bring in some fill, depending on what the use is, you know, if it's a commercial.
Jamie, correct me if I'm wrong, but on the north, or on the side of where that storage facility is, the opposite side of the street is where there's more of a, what is it, not a buffer, but a allowance, our North Bend Way street is wider on that side of the road, whatever it is.
That's the other thing I was going to say. I don't know exactly where the existing right-of-way lines up. There might be
push isn't maybe against that business. It's going to be the opposite way, and you would take the road and bend it further out so you could create that sidewalk and everything else on that other side.
Right.
And literally, if you look at Tanner Pit, you can take 3 or 4 dump loads of dirt and you can create a lot.
Yeah, it really depends where the right-of-way jogs, because there's other places further to the east where it in front of their businesses. They have all this excess right-of-way that, you know, it doesn't exist on the south side yet, or mm-hmm. it's mixed.
I think in general, I mean, I agree with having...
You bring up a great point. I just want to say...
There's just like a, yeah, I mean, I guess there's just a practical side, but I definitely agree with biochannels and preserving open space. So, it seems positive to me, but it's just, there's very little detail here. So it's we usually give a little bit more when we're recommending something. So that's just what's been a little challenging. I'm glad we've had a couple meetings worth of time to think about it and look at it.
Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about landscape strip, we seem to have a variety of plantings depending on the development, and you know, a variety is nice, but then if we want to create a theme along our main street, do we want to be very specific instead of just a landscape? Do we want to say type 2 native dogwoods, mm-hmm. cedars, mm-hmm. Douglas firs, mm-hmm. rhododendrons, azaleas, anything of those nature that, one, do well with our wildlife population, and two, are native and grow well mm-hmm. here, you know, mm-hmm. native, you know, kind of natural to the area, mm-hmm. instead of other things, big leaf maples, you know, whatever it may be. But I just think a landscape, I don't want random.
Mm-hmm.
I want.
It does say in here, right at the bottom of page 1, street tree species shall be sugar maple or silver queen, mm-hmm. maple spaced and planted in available swale. Native evergreen species may also be approved. But you're suggesting a lot more than that are actually native.
Neither sugar maple or silver queen are native.
Right. Right.
I mean, sugar maple has a pretty fall health. That's why mm-hmm. you do that.
But they also spread pretty easy. And it's a not native. I'm sorry? No, go ahead.
Quicker growing, aren't they, as well?
Right, and so just to clarify this, the trees you just mentioned, that's on the south side on the Tanner Trail section. I don't know.
But it was specific to that.
Yes. Okay. So I don't know if, Chair, you were talking about the north side where the bioswales are. Matching the trees would be a nice idea. We have listed approved species in our tree and our landscape code, mm-hmm. And we do require 70% native, drought tolerant. But that would be, yeah, that would be something we could either specify. I don't have the type of tree we would want off the top of my head along that section. Or address it in the landscape code.
Go ahead.
I thought two things. I actually like the idea that, you know, there may be places where rhododendrons, for example, would be more appropriate than a tree for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
But I do get concerned about plants that spread in a way that inhibit view of the trail. If you get it too dense, you're not going to see what's going on behind it. And I think that becomes a public safety issue. So, you know, there'd have to be a little bit of thought into mm-hmm. Location and lines of sight. But I like the idea of adding things like rhododendron and specifically having it be native plants. So it's something that if you go back in the hills, you might run into, so that we kind of bring that to the people that are coming through the town.
Mm-hmm.
And North Bend Way is kind of a unique opportunity, actually, to do that with a larger number of people that are coming, just passing through.
Yeah.
You might not be here to hide.
If nothing, in some way, we're paying homage to our timber years, right? Mm-hmm. To plant some timber along the way. So, yeah. I almost go against sugar maples, being from the native East Coaster. You know, I have experience in how they proliferate and their root structure. I don't find them very friendly as a planting.
Beautiful in the fall.
That they are.
Well, hasn't Issaquah, a few years ago, they chopped down all their maples out there in the center and replanted. Those trees grew fast. They look vibrant in the fall. Mm-hmm. They're a mess as far as the root systems go. So they're, you've got to be thinking about what's underneath the ground, because that's going to affect
pushing the road up and knocking over.
Mm-hmm. If you want to, if you want to delete that tree,
I think when you put all these non-natives in, I mean, it could look like a fake town. You know, I mean, it's not like the surrounding area. And there are native shrubs we could use. There's obviously native evergreens which we can use. Mm-hmm. It sounds like there's.
I had the luxury of going up to Bouchard's Gardens, right? And there's a plethora of dogwoods that will work, and some that are native and some that might be cousins of natives. I really think that if we had a spring show of dogwoods along a lane, that would be more impressive than the rainy fall, sometimes color.
And in the spring, that's like red flowering currant, those grow well here and are native. Yeah, we could easily put together a planting plan.
Is there a appetite to replace sugar maple or sugar maple and silver maple with dogwood as my preferred substitution with allowances for Rhodey and
mother from North Carolina? Very happy if we increase the number of dogwoods. She could see it.
Okay.
I think you're replacing a shrub for a tree, so.
Yeah, I think give the ammunition to a landscape designer of what they can do and allow them to mix and mingle,
then
right?
I would say just delete sugar maple or silver queen maple.
So you want to strike sugar maple or silver maple, and we want to replace it with dogwood?
I didn't say that. I think if we took some time, we could have some tree and shrub options in there. I think it might be a rush to just put dogwood in there. I'm not against
dogwood. I have the ones that I'm proposing, yeah. And I can
You're
make
right
a motion
now.
If you would like.
Meditation
subcommittee.
I can think of two trees and four shrubs if you want to put
something together. Or do we want to be a bit more generic and indicate native Washington species? Would that work?
Yeah, I think the natives,
it allows for a little bit of latitude on the part of the
Type 2 landscaping is Douglas fir, cedar, and what else? I don't remember.
Well, type 2, type 1, type 2, type 3 in our code just specifies how many, the density, and a percentage of deciduous versus evergreen. And then, like I said, throughout we require 70% native and 50% minimum drought tolerant. If you go to 100% drought tolerant, you don't have to put in permanent irrigation, so there's an incentive there.
My hemlocks are having trouble right now. They're native, but yeah.
Well, I think that avoiding the ones that might drop branches or as big are.
There's a type of tree that doesn't drop branches.
There are some that like to do it a lot more often, and it tends to come down on cars.
it might not be
the best thing to have on a trail where people walk and are adjacent or whatever.
Yeah. Sorry. Mike, what were the trees that were removed at Encompass? Do you know the species name, or Jamie,
cottonwood.
Do you know?
Oh.
Was that cottonwood?
No. There was something, but it was that type, that drop branch.
And it doesn't have to be bad weather, and they'll just spontaneously drop a branch.
Mike, you know?
Please be careful about proximity of trees to sidewalks and roads.
Oh, sorry. I thought you knew the tree name.
No, I don't, but it's just occurring to me, like, as you start thinking about these trees, that a problem sometimes you sidewalks. We have this problem in the neighborhood and probably throughout a lot of places, so be careful what you pick next to the paved trail.
Okay. I'm going to move to strike Move to strike sugar maple or silver maple, queen maple. Move to strike sugar maple or silver queen maple. And replace with dogwood. Or native species.
Drought tolerant native species.
I would say, I mean, if you want to add a couple things, I mean,
It's a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it so you can add this friendly amendment.
Okay. Motion has been moved and seconded. Discussion. Commissioner Heller.
If you want to add some tree and shrub species, evergreens can be grand fir, dove fir, cedar, and shrub species, snowberry, ocean spray, red flowering currant, nuka rose, Oregon grape.
Grand fir, dove fir,
snowberry,
cedar.
Cedar for trees.
Yeah, snowberry spreads well. There's thimbleberry, ocean spray, red flowering currant, nuka rose if you want to keep people away, and Oregon grape. Tall Oregon grape. So those are species that do well in restoration.
Elderberry?
Probably not. It's kind of like a wetland edge species. The deer and elk.
No, we don't want to encourage them into the roadway.
So snowberry, thimbleberry, red flowering.
Currant.
What did I write? Currant and tall Oregon grape.
Yeah, nuka rose, ocean spray. They're probably already in the native lists.
Yeah. I accept your amendment. Any other discussion?
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
Are we only talking about the south side or the bio channels as well?
South side of North Bend Way.
All right.
If the commission wants to make it elsewhere, it's up to them.
So we're just voting, if we were to vote, it would be on adding that.
On the amendment, and then on the amended motion.
We still need a motion for 7.
Right. We need that first?
No, we did that.
Did you never attend it?
I don't think we did it. I'm paying attention.
Yes, I had a motion by Commissioner Gildersleeve and a second by Commissioner Miller.
That was for docket 5.
That was
for docket 5.
Oh, it was. Yeah.
The reason I write this down is we're going. Wow. It's docket 5. We can do it again.
I was surprised by the quick question. I thought there was going to be a motion first.
Make a motion to approve docket 7 as written.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Bontrap. Is there a second? Second by Commissioner Gildersleeve. Discussion. My motion is to strike on page 1 sugar maple. I'm sorry, strike in section 19.05.020.D on page 1. Strike sugar maple or silver queen maple and replace with dogwood or native species. Can I have a second? Second by Commissioner Miller. And discussion or motion, Commissioner Heller. You'll move to amend my motion with?
All these species. Can we list them again?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Trees, grand fir, dug fir, cedar, shrubs, thimbleberry, snowberry, ocean spray, red flowering currant, nuka rose, tall Oregon grape, and it's mentioned before.
Do we have a second for the amendment?
Clarification on the amendment.
1 second, let it get seconded first.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Bontrap. Gildersleeve, Commissioner Bontrap.
You say cedar. You have a lot of fans of cedar. Western red.
Oh. Yeah, red cedar. Yeah, the yellow is like a high elevation,
right? Just in case it matters.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They would have to be planted in the right area because it's beautiful. They don't want full sun. But, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's why there's landscape designer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any further discussion on the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Amendment is approved. It's unanimous. back to the main motion to strike sugar maple or silver maple, silver queen maple, and replace with dogwood or native species, including the ones listed in the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. The motion is approved. It's unanimous.
I'm not sure if we needed to move on that one.
Yeah. So then, yeah, because that motion stays active during the amendment. Yeah. I get you.
We're going through so many.
Hey, we're doing good. It's 8:30. So back to anything else on North Bend Way. Thank you for that. I feel so much better with those changes. Okay, anything further on Southeast 140th? I guess my only question that I thought of, Mike, is why are we having an asphalt trail on one side and a sidewalk on another? Why can't we make them both the same?
I think Jamie spoke pretty clearly to that earlier. One side you have bus trees, so you have more of your standard street section. That's going to be your primary ingress, egress for the school children getting to the schools, whereas on the other side, it's going to be more of a meandering trail. It's going to have a lot more of a rural feel. We'll be able to maintain a lot of the trees and meander that trail through the business buffer, that 50-foot buffer. So the asphalt trail, it looks less formal also than a concrete sidewalk as well. So I'll let Jamie speak a little more.
Like, I guess I was looking for, is there one that, you know, it's safer because it's 8 inches up and so you don't have a car hop or, you know?
Yeah. Well, on your traditional street section, having the curb, then the 6-foot or 5-foot planter, and then the traditional sidewalk, you're always within 5 feet of cars. So you do want that little higher elevation also, the curb. On the south, you know, on the south side, you have that 8 to 10 foot buffer from the bioretention, essentially a ditch, and that provides great protection from cars. And so the elevation isn't nearly as critical. You have quite a bit more space.
The asphalt might be put in there too as the material because it has less impact to the roots for construction than a concrete.
Any chance we can ask the local businesses that are in that area if they want to contribute to making this trail?
Yes.
Just think about the safety of their employees who are walking on Middle Fork Road where there isn't anything.
Right.
And they have 9-foot travel lanes and are
right
at risk. So I think their employees would greatly appreciate something like this too.
Right.
Okay, any further discussion? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Changes? You ready for the question? Okay, the motion before you is to approve docket request number 7 to amend North Bend Street Standards as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is unanimous. It is approved. Number 8 we're skipping, so docket number 9. Docket number 9 to not allow residential in the EP1 zone west of downtown. This is from the City of North Bend. Do I have a motion?
Make a motion to approve docket as written.
Okay, motion by Commissioner Von Trapp and a second. Second verbally?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Gildersleeve. Okay, discussion.
I think it's a great idea. Mm-hmm. We had a good feedback and discussion about it the last meeting.
Are you ready for the question? I just really think when we're talking about creating a zone that, you know, can gather jobs, doesn't have a place for residential in it, and we really need to keep that zone preserved for that opportunity. So with that, all those in favor of the motion before you is to approve docket request number 8, rezone North Bend zoning, docket number 9 is what we're doing. Sorry. 8 we skipped, that's why I didn't. Okay. Docket number 9, to not allow residential in the EP1 zone west of downtown. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion is approved. It is unanimous. Okay, docket request number 10 is being skipped. Planning Commission, good of the order. We're skipping 6, 8, and 10, which are still with CED, and we'll get updates too.
Introduction.
Oh, yeah, we have Planning Commission procedures. Hi.
He worked so hard at the last meeting that he's just right.
I'm in disbelief that we're actually going to talk about these.
Yeah, you've been waiting and waiting.
10/19/2016. Okay. We worked slowly and methodically. So I trust that you all have read over the procedures, and it reads much better when you incorporate the changes. On page 4, I really wanted to create the structure for the commission that talked about chair, vice chair, our roles, and what to do if neither of us can be here. I think just having some clear and logical procedures made sense to me. I think that the meeting location in public was just a move. Same thing with meeting time. I might have made some updates. And your opportunity, if you want to look on page 5, is that I somehow thought about 10 o'clock instead of 9 o'clock. And we'll happy to amend. Yeah.
I have a question for the order. Do you intend to take public comment? Because I sent a comment actually on the procedures.
I'll ask Jamie if we're going to have a public comment on them.
Okay.
But this is our first introduction.
Don't know if you take comment at that time or not. Okay, that's all.
Yeah. When Jamie gets back, I'll ask
Mike. Sure, that's all.
Thank you.
Just want to make sure.
Yeah. So anyway, 10 o'clock p.m. I'd like to see that back to 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Does that need a motion?
No. Yeah, if you want to get it done, make a motion and do it. Okay. Very little done to absences and attendance. Yes.
And I know this is still a challenge for us, but I have brought up before the fact that back because of experience in prior years with the difficulty of maintaining a full complement of volunteers, considering how hard it can be some days. I think that we should look at that again, because that's something that's always kind of uppermost in my mind, particularly with city events where we can all accidentally end up being there. You might see me like dive through the crowd in the opposite direction because I see too many commissioners kind of hanging out in one spot.
So,
and I'm very aware of just perception of the public in that situation.
Page 7, item number 8 is our quorum section. And I'd be interested to hear, because I haven't heard any public comment. I have my own personal perception that I experienced, and I've been to a few meetings where there's been three of us, and we're still able to conduct the city business. I feel an absence with Commissioner Ryan and Lucky not being here. I think everybody's voice is essential. That's why I want, you know, our attention. And it is a difficult decision, and one you talk about the perception of it, and there's the need of the city to move on. One could argue that the city shouldn't move on without that weigh in, right? Mm-hmm. But we're a recommending body, and there's also some time constraints that also have to be adhered to. So I'm going to stop talking. You can ask me questions, but let the rest of the Planning Commission weigh in. Those are kinds of some of the things, I guess, that, you know, I've weighed in on, why I just left it alone at three.
I have some comments on, like, a specific section, like the...
Are we there yet? Do we skip it, or can you hold on?
I think there was a couple skipped over. I guess a general question, though, or comment is, I don't see anything about the process for, like, do we have a motion, second?
I thought there's Robert rules in here somewhere.
Is that having
Yeah, the default is to go to the Robert's rules. I can't remember if that's pointed out in here. And where?
I just think something like that should be right at the beginning, because that's kind of just how you communicate in the meeting. So a new member could easily see and the language. Because I know that after you're on this for a while, it's really common and you're just, you know, just all rattling it off. But mm-hmm. I would think of this document as something for a new member. That, mm-hmm. That's the way it's most useful. So,
our applicant.
Yeah, and who's interested. Yeah.
It's also, I think, for the public to understand how the meetings work. And I think that can be, when you have someone come in that doesn't have a lot of experience with public meetings, the formality of it, and maybe what is all this stuff about, this is a good resource for someone who wants to know, well, why are they doing what they are doing, what are the rules.
Yeah, and I think that's where we... the additions starting on page 9 get to a lot of that and the process. And I'd have to look back. I just read it earlier today, chapter 2.28, which is the Planning Commission chapter in the code, also provides some clarity on that.
Well, to your point, it would fit under Section 3 somewhere, and yeah, we just need to Robert's rules. I'll find it where it's written, and if it's in our general North Bend Municipal Code section, yeah, 2 dot whatever.
We could copy it over, yeah.
Yeah.
In Section 3, under meetings.
Yeah. I believe I have the Word copy if you want me to update that.
Okay.
You won't say no to me taking work from
you? Do you have the track changes one? Yeah.
Yeah, I think you sent it to me after the...
Okay.
After the...
yeah, I don't think we've made any other changes yet.
Yeah, if not, you can...
Yeah.
Scott, you had another one?
Yeah, I'm just at 2.4. So commission members, when a commission member should be recognized by the chair before asking questions or providing other information that gives a reason why. So I guess maybe we should put in there how you get the chair's attention. Is that by raising your hand?
Where are you again? I'm sorry.
2.4. 2 inches with your right hand, 1 with your left. Whoever yells the loudest, you know, Parliament style.
Yeah.
Just staring at me.
Yeah. It's not about you. It's just, you know, it's about just the process.
I want to say that it's a luxury with this planning commission, and that we have such wonderful people that truly are very respectful and conduct themselves well. I think this is kind of boilerplate, where if you don't have structure to your meeting or good control of them, that you need that, right? I think, you know, my effort is to always keep the dialogue fair, and by fair, it's adhering to Robert's rules, which governs in a debate. Once one person speaks, they don't speak again until everyone else has had their turn. And that's where I try and hold you off and get everybody else's buy-in before I go back to that same person. That's, I guess, the only, it helps me in, you know, if you at least look to me, that I can kind of manage that discussion in those rules. If that makes sense. If not, then I'm happy to hear a change.
It does make sense. I think it would be good to have something in writing, and it's obviously not a law that you would chair would have to follow, but some sort of process would be useful.
You could just put by hand, commission members should be recognized by the chair.
Well, in Robert's rules, you're recognized by either, you know, the chair opening the floor to you or calling your name.
Yeah. Not necessarily a hand or something.
Yeah. I mean, that's where I'm giving their name, and so to say somebody else running it, how would, I just think of Robert's rules, and that's all I'm going along. Yeah.
I kind of see where Scott's going with this, because we have you who manages the meetings in the way that you do, and a group of people that it works with. That's not always the case. And having something clearly laid out so that you do have that even sharing and recognition, and something that can be referred to if someone feels that they're being cut out of conversations by the chair, I do think it's important to have something clearly stated. It's not an issue now, but that doesn't mean that it couldn't be an issue at some point.
Yeah, right on. I appreciate that. And that's fine if you guys want to think about it, you know, and come back. Certainly, Jamie, process-wise, this is our introduction to the item.
Right.
We're going to come back with a public hearing.
I don't believe you have to have a public hearing on this.
And are we going to take any public comments? Because I know that I got an email about somebody speaking about the speaking time.
Okay. Well, let me verify that. This is the introduction, so it's coming back.
Can you hold it till after?
I had actually sent a comment on this. I was one of the people who actually sent a written comment on this.
Did you get a reply?
No. I just want to know when the public can comment on the procedures, because I think there's some helpful suggestions you can have, and I'm just asking politely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I get you. So, Jamie, that's a question for the commission and the public, is what happens to these next, you know, as we go through them. So this is definitely our introduction and first brush, right? And so with anything, you know, we can ask questions and then come back. If we have more changes, we can still make them. Okay?
No public comments tonight.
Yeah.
But it may be based on your investigation.
But it's also helpful to hear what the Planning Commission is thinking, you know, if you're going to make public comment, that you're in, you know, in the know. Okay, so we were talking about commission members in 2.4. Yeah, I'm struggling to come up with anything at this point, and so leave it with a note, and maybe next meeting we can come back with something.
That's fine.
Okay, so anything up to Section 8 quorum? Anybody?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
This is something I've wondered. I think I got an answer last year, whenever I asked, but it's in the absences and attendance. I don't know, approximately around E, where talks about future absence, and I guess I'm wondering, can you submit comments prior to a meeting you know you won't be able to attend, or there is a vote? Have you ever your vote count, or do you have to be present to vote?
You have to be present to vote, but you can have your comments considered prior to the vote. And I recommend that you send them to the chair and to the staff.
And I would say we should make sure that that is in there. You must be present to vote.
Sorry, which page are you on again?
We're on page 5.
Because I wasn't clear.
Section 4.
A process that I have at my work, you can email in your vote ahead of time, and that is totally part of the process. So
it says, so under subsection E, it says the commission through a majority vote of a quorum present reserves the right.
That's under the quorum section, right?
Absences and attendee and attendance. So that tells me the majority vote of the quorum present.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I understand, you know, you can still submit your comments and you can give it to the people present to consider. But I guess just make it clear, those procedures, that if you're not, because I wasn't aware of that the first time, I was not able to attend. So just one of those things, I don't know if it's,
I feel it's clear. So
where is it clear?
In
F.
Yeah, a quorum of the commission may review and act on the product being deliberated. So that's where it's giving you that notice. So if that's not clear, then we should reword that.
Just a lot of ways to define that. So I guess then let's go back to the word quorum.
Yep.
The quorum is those present at the meeting.
That's a good act.
Right now it just says, page 7, 8.
Yeah.
Quorum provides 3 members of the commission shall constitute a quorum for the transaction of business.
So we should add in-person members.
Three members in person, or
three
members present.
Mm-hmm. I might just reword it so it's clear. Okay. All right. Anything further on quorum? You were talking about the number 3?
They've expanded the size of the commission. The 3, has always been explained to me, is that they have kept it at 3 because it has been historically a problem to have the commission fully
I'm confused because since I've been on the commission, I thought it was always 7. So I don't remember when it was less than.
I think the people that were talking about it were looking back 15 or 20 years. I think that at one point it was 5. And was increased at later.
I think when we annexed to the east,
they added
to Trucktown. Yeah.
And that number has been held at 3 because of the challenges in actually having 7 volunteers sitting in the seats and filling the commission out to its full strength. It's just something that I think we need to have in the thought process of whether or not we've reached a point that we need to increase that. I know that it is still sometimes a challenge because of the way the world works and life works for volunteers. But whether or not that is something that needs to at least be within the thought processes, given the increase in size. And the fact that we seem to have consistently had 7 people now for nearly 4 years that I've been sitting here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the next level up would be 4,
And that would be a simple majority, right? Any thoughts on that?
Thought is city council has a quorum. I'm not actually sure. So what is their number?
I don't know off the top of my head.
I'm almost certain it's four. Mm-hmm.
It's just something I thought.
This may be something we want feedback from the council on and their thoughts, since we're here to advise them.
Right. And
we will get this approved by them.
So we'll hear about it.
One way or the other.
But I do think, you know, not necessarily to make a decision, but I do think it's something we need to be thinking about, whether or not it's time to make that change since we're in here.
Right.
Because heaven knows when we'll have time to actually do this again and they'll let us work on it.
Right.
It was 1990 something this document was dated.
Precisely. So do we want to do that now?
Right.
Yeah.
Assuming that they're probably not going to be looking at this for another.
Because it takes time to get attorney reviews and cost, right? So here's where I'm with you. When I joined the Planning Commission, I was surprised that it wasn't four. And 100%, but then I also have had discussions with the mayor along the same lines of the concerns that you would not, be able to conduct business. On the other side of that, I come down as a resident of North Bend saying, well, maybe I don't want you to conduct the business because you don't have the number of people that should be weighing in on the decision.
Mm-hmm.
So if you all are in favor of four, I will amend it to four. Seeing none, opposed?
Okay. I was just thinking about it, I guess. Been to a couple of meetings, I think, where we haven't had enough. But I see your point. Why maybe we should push it out farther if that does happen.
I guess just the added benefit. I mean, right now, very civil, very respectful. Doesn't necessarily mean it's always going to be that way. And so this provides, I guess, long-term protection against potential railroading.
It provides more input. More voices in the room is always better.
I like the idea of the simple majority. Getting us to that point.
Okay. Four it is. Anything else on page 7?
I just had one on going back on number 7.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to get better at looking at the electronic versions, but a lot of times since the paper copy is mailed, I end up just looking at that.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know if it would be better. I know it's probably already hard for staff to get it out in the crunch time they have, but in the second sentence, starting with agendas, just instead of having are typically mailed, making it shall be mailed. Not later than the Friday preceding regular meetings, because if we are going to get the paper copy, we should have a couple days to review it.
Yeah, I believe I wanted it received on the Friday before the meeting,
yeah.
So that way we had the weekend to enjoy a beverage and review it, as all Planning Commission 80-page documents should be.
Some of this tiny print, highlight, and then when I get the paper copy, it gets transferred over. So I've been using it that way. And part of this, too, is that my mailing address is near my office, which means I don't get it till Tuesday, the physical packet. And if I waited to get the physical packet, there's no way I would get through 80 pages, or even the shorter ones in a timely way. And as we move to electronic, because I did see an announcement that packets for everyone else will be on the new system.
Mm-hmm.
I think the electronic is becoming.
So let's pause on that. Jamie, can you give us any insight on the new system and what the city is thinking as far as.
So the new system I think you're talking about is the Notify Me.
Yeah.
So that's just to make it. That's also a big part of that is the distribution so that we're not having to manage do you want to get them or not? And then we forgot somebody, or their email changed, or it got bounced back, or so you go in, you sign up on the city's website, and you pick if you want to have council or planning commission, and then you can unsubscribe as much as you want or subscribe. So it's just to be managed more by the recipients, but planning commission would still receive the same email and then hard copy. We weren't planning on yet going away from that.
I like the hard copies, especially in the meetings, because when we have mm-hmm. public comment or mm-hmm. other comment from the planning mm-hmm. commission, I can reference it on the page. Mm-hmm. And while I usually travel with some kind of a tablet, in the meeting it seemed I haven't been able to adopt it as mm-hmm. smoothly as I have still with paper. Mm-hmm. So I think the packets are still necessary. The question is, I guess, notification and time to digest and read the materials is really important, so we come prepared. Like I said, my preference is to have them Friday before the meeting and enjoy that weekend time. If you're working, then you know, at work most of those days, so you're only getting an hour or two a night to digest that. Reading it online works, for a lot of it, and plus it allows me to go and do research online by copying and pasting something, you know, so I do like the online version. So, back to you on any, Scott, any thoughts or changes to that?
Maybe in addition, because I don't see a timing of emailing the packet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in general, a week before the meeting should be what we'd be targeting. I think that's happening. I think it's on Thursday. But, with so much content here, and I know it's probably hard for you guys to get that mm-hmm. turnaround because it's only a two-week stretch, so I see the other side of it, but for us as reviewers, we also need as much time as we can get. So mm-hmm. I guess if, I don't know when the mail packet would arrive, but at least the email version would be available on that Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Jamie, is that obtainable? Is that something you can do? Email 1 week before? You, as in the staff.
I think for the most part that works, and typically we like to have it out by Thursdays, but there are some cases where there's one piece we're waiting for Friday morning. So it would help us, I guess, to know Thursday's preferred, and if we leave it in similar language, are typically mailed, and then we add in the and email Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
That we should for sure be able to meet that. If we say shall and then we don't meet it a couple times, you know, I don't want to get in trouble. But
that's
the only caveat. Occasionally,
they're generally,
I am always the proponent.
They're generally mailed.
Yes, they are typically mailed and emailed Thursday by close of business. Yeah, I think we could add that in. No problem.
Okay. Anything else on page 7? No, page 8. Minutes went unchanged, but do you have any changes to that? I didn't check the RCWs to make sure those are still active.
Right, yeah.
I don't know if that's what we should while we're there.
Mm-hmm.
Number 13, something I added in. I try and go as often as I can, but I'd love to see other people there. I think it's really easy, especially when we did something like the street lighting standards, and we talked all about the dark sky. Scott, maybe you brought that in, to go to the city council meeting and actually say, you know, this was something I brought forward, and here's what the thinking was, adds a little bit more to help them understand, you know, the basis for our decisions, and especially if you feel passionately why something should get passed. Is welcome to do that. I think our staff does an incredible job of recreating meetings that were 2 or 3 months ago, but still helps if we can go and voice our thoughts. And it's fine if you're in opposition with me, and I'm there too. Now, the hearing examiner, I thought this was something novel. I read it in maybe Bellevue's code that there seems to be a great amount of public involvement in a hearing examiner's room, because at that point the public's engaged in what's going on. And in our rooms, we don't always hear that feedback. And this might be a way for us to capture more citizen feedback and understanding about what's going on in their minds as a way to adopt that back into how we're going to plan the future of our city. So that's why it's there. Yes?
I'm wondering if we can add, as we give a report on the current status of permits, if we could get a list of items that are going to the hearing examiner so that we're aware.
Is that something Tom's aware?
Can we do that?
So we don't have a list. It's more just when projects come up, we individually schedule those hearings.
Can we add copies of those notices to the commission package?
Copies of the hearing notices.
Mm-hmm. I thought I saw a notify me thing. There was a box you could click.
Yes, and those would definitely show up, any hearing notice. So... subscribe for sure, and then we can add it here too.
Jamie, those are typically one page?
Yes, the notice will be, yep. The hearing examiner decisions, longer, but yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Is there audio from the meetings?
There are audio.
Where are they housed?
They're not typically put online, but they can be emailed, and they're in our files. We email it and send a disc to the hearing examiner following the hearing, anybody that requests them. And
I would love to listen. I just don't know if I have another 2 hours.
I think the hearing examiner's decision is really good about describing the focus, really. He adds in our staff recommendations and conditions at the back, but the whole front of it is these people were here to speak, these were their concerns, this is what we talked about, this is how it's being addressed. So it really does give you a good picture, if you weren't there, of the content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that would be very helpful then.
No. Okay. I'm supposed to be getting one like tomorrow, so I can forward it to you for fun.
Yes, yeah. As a trial.
Trial, yeah.
All right. Well, good. Annual reports is something that I think is always wonderful for the commission to look back on the work that we've done and mm-hmm. all the things that we've moved along to council. Page 9, who's public participation. Yes.
On the annual report, who's responsible for compiling it?
The staff. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You look back at the agendas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Should that fact be called out in that line? Because it doesn't actually say who's...
It might be in the municipal code.
Right.
Yeah, I'll check.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that sentence reads like it's an update that the planners would give to the city council on what happened at the last couple of meetings, whereas an annual report is not what that paragraph describes.
You're talking about number 16 and number 15?
16. Yeah, 16, I guess I was looking at it.
Yeah, 15 is the reports that they do, that they the staff.
Okay. Yeah, so that would be, as you mentioned, just going and speaking at the city council meeting, but I don't know where the annual report comes from, then. Mm-hmm. That maybe isn't the right title.
Okay. there's a report that basically the staff can provide us that gives us a look at what we've done in the last year.
Yeah, I guess maybe what you're saying is if I think it's the city council that's requesting that, so I would have to check the code to see if that is formalized in there. If the city council doesn't request it, like you said, like you think you're saying, it may not happen, or it could happen in another form.
The only thing that's throwing me off about that is an annual report that we use in there, the word periodically.
Yeah, that's what I'm like. Annual report is a once a year thing.
That was the disconnect.
I'll have to reread that code.
Yeah, I'll do that too.
Figure it out. Page 9, the work-study session is, I think, what's new there. And that came out of when we were doing our land use update, and we kind of invited the public in to talk about zoning changes throughout the city and did some workshops and some theories behind that. So Jenna kind of led those.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought we ought to have just that in there, that they do happen, however
mm-hmm.
rare.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just had a comment on that.
Mm-hmm.
On the just the way it's who you're speaking to,
mm-hmm.
I think it might be better to say something like the Planning Commission is interested in the public's
yeah.
comments regarding land use proposals being considered, as well as other land use matters the commission should be aware of or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just because it just changed all of a sudden that way. But I know you're essentially are speaking to the public, but it's just that sentence.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
As far as this being like an informative document on procedures and also allowing for some type of, I don't know, maybe the right words, accountability, the comments and non-agenda items, it would be nice to, I guess, address sometimes those might not receive any follow-up. And if they request follow-up, what that might look like, and not necessarily a time frame, but some type of validation that, and, you know, an encouragement to contribute. But the, sometimes comments are made, and that's kind of it. And, you know, people are taking time out of their lives just like we are. It'd be nice to.
Good comment. So. I would think about, Jamie,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's something a lot of times when you're introducing a subject and we get comments and we get questions, then that's really relevant to the discussion we're having. But public comment on non-agenda items, I almost see that as my responsibility to advocate based on that citizen's voice, whether I'm going to
mm-hmm.
ask the staff or ask the commission to do something.
Mm-hmm.
What's missing from all of this is that we are at the pleasure of the mayor and the city council. We don't set our agenda. And just because the citizens want us to hear it doesn't mean that we get to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I don't know how to capture that
yeah.
In a proper way.
But like explaining that, but also, I feel like it's important that they know their comment was heard,
mm-hmm.
and whether it's a follow-up email from the staff or something, you know, this is, I don't know what I'm trying to suggest, but like I don't have a specific idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do we do with citizen comments on non-agenda items,
right.
and how do we take care of that?
Right.
And that's
mm-hmm.
truly, you know, if I can, you know, think about a way from the Planning Commission's ability to work with staff or to enact something to happen, how do I capture it here? It's a struggle, right? It's I have to think hard about that.
I think the council does the same thing that you guys do. I mean, I feel like they do, and so that would be maybe a good question to ask as they review. You know, do you have any input, or how could we work on this?
Yeah. Because we should reflect right. theirs if
should mimic. Yeah, it should definitely mimic, and
assuming that they do, they have some type of process.
Yeah.
Maybe reset a higher bar.
But you do see people coming back meeting after meeting with the same comments.
Right.
So.
Which shouldn't necessarily be necessary. Like, make your comment, it was heard, and then they acted on it. So.
Mm-hmm. And it's actually, you've identified it though, that there's not some sort of clear, I come and I talk and this is what happens. So the response is to come again and again with the same comment.
Right.
Because you're not feeling that it's being.
I think our formal review is the dockets. Mm-hmm. That's where the public has the once a year opportunity.
My thought that I have in the back of my head, and I just want to voice this, Mr. Thomas, who's in our audience right now, reads our packets and does research and can contribute some valuable feedback. If you've listened to the King County Council and you listen to their public comment on non-agenda items, some are very vulgar, some are very scary, and you know, I don't want to put a commitment in if we were to have those types of comments. We've had some just podium stances, like at city councils, and the same thing can happen at our meetings. That's where I I hesitate, because we all should know the difference between what needs to be acted upon and not, and we should be taking those things up. How do I capture, you know, that in there somewhere? I just, I'm struggling with the commitment to do so, because I know what can happen in public comment. Just anything can be said.
Yeah.
Mr. Thomas, would you like to
say? I guess since you mentioned me, you know, as I look, you know, actually this is the first time I've been through the docket planning process, so thanks for taking a moment to acknowledge me. Is, you know, as we go through this, this is a multi-week process or even a multi-month process. So citizens only get 3 minutes at the start to make their comments, or this is the only time I get to make my one email. Before that, you know, we might find new things during this process of your dialogue and listening, have great questions, or, you know, which then fall on non-agenda items, or they're barred from the agenda. So how do we as the public get to have ongoing feedback into your dialogue? You ask each other great questions. I pine sometimes to want to just step in and ask questions when you're asking questions of the planning commission or debating. So, you know, how do we get the proper public input? And if you say it can't be done during non-agenda items, or if it is, then there's a real problem here. Or, you know, I could have easily said something like was pertinent to your docket, but I chose not to because I want to respect your rules. But there really is a balance of debate problem here. You know, there are a lot of people that spend a lot of time researching. I do equally well. I see vulgar comments too. I mean, there are some people also that lose it in city council, but I do want to say that it is, you know, the well-researched ones are certainly worth hearing. You also hear some frustrations, but as long as they're fine, you should listen to them. But I also see a balance problem as we debate this in 2017 and also act on non-agenda comment, that what do you do with it? It's very tough. So that's my concern is, you know, we can have an avenue for more public input even as you're starting to take that, because it can influence the outcome. So it's I think the problem is how do you deal with that balance of public view.
Okay. Thank you very much for your feedback. 100%, when I look at Robert's rules and I have something to read and adhere, that's great, and we are all volunteers, and I think in some ways this question is larger than us and what we have the time to dedicate to it. Jamie, when you talk about council and council procedures and process, they are going to be more formal than us. At what discretion do we have to break with the formality to allow public participation at multiple meetings on a topic? So before we deliberate again tonight, because we had to continue the meeting, you know, is it in my right to then take more additional public comment when it wasn't noticed publicly and not everyone knew that they could come and do this? Or do we change our procedures and actually notice it so that we'll accept public comment multiple times? Because I think we do have notification requirements to adhere to. I don't know all the ramifications, right? We can't just have public comment. We have to open it up to everybody.
Right.
And that requires a proper messaging channel
right.
and notification channel. So
yeah, and part of that is all meetings are open to the public. If the topics are on the agenda. So I think it gets back to those non-agenda topics and then how to continue to accept comment. So that, I will bring that up with, I'll look into the code more. I don't think the council's doing anything different than you guys are or being more formal than you guys are from what I've seen. It's very similar. People comment on non-agenda items, there's not a discussion, and they move on to their agenda items. So, but I'll find out if there's any ways that we can improve that or any avenues we can take to make some changes, and maybe that could be reflected in here and then brought up with council committee and council as well.
Yeah. I think when we have an engaged public, it makes our decisions better. I just don't know how to make it fair, and when you make it fair, how to constrain the rules so that we can still get work done, because how rare it is, but we had 2.5 hours of public debate. If we had that every meeting, it would be hard to get things done. So.
Right, and if you had 20 people here instead of two, you know, right now, and so that's where those time limits were, you know, created from, but there's definitely a balance, and generally, for accepting comments, you know, for our notices, we have a deadline, but we always, if one comes late or whatever, we always accept it. I mean, we're not going to just say, no, that one doesn't count. Or
we get those handed to us at the start of the meeting. Yes, we had that. So, you know, with that, I think it falls on knowing as a chair to be more lenient. And sometimes I stick hard and fast to rules. They're a comfort, right? It's, you're fair and consistent. That said, questions that come up and to take them on, I've voiced, you know, what my concerns are. I think talking this out, I'll listen to the recording, has helped me figure out maybe a way to draft it in there. You hit on the very point that's not mentioned, and for good reason. Okay. Anything else on page 9?
Just a consideration to move. We haven't made it to the next couple sections yet, but through starting public participation all the way through the page 12. Just wondering if that should be in section 3 for the meetings. Section is, but going back to page 4. So it seems like, because as we're mentioning, public comment is important for participation, so that should be connected to the meeting procedure. And I know that maybe that meeting was just, number 3 was meant to be a real high-level overview, but if you want it to be more comprehensive, we can bring that in the section more at the beginning of the procedure.
Yeah. What you're proposing, certainly it can be done. It's a total different structure than what I was thinking and the way that the document was without trying to...
Yeah, I know. I'd have to see it, like, without all the track changes and picking up. So it's just, I'm not... it's always a matter of opinion on flow, but something worth bringing.
When I go to incorporate it all and look at it, I'll take another look. But I kind of like it where it is for now. Okay, how's everybody doing? It's getting pretty late. We are at page 10, which is public hearings, 16.3.
Hmm? You can finish your sentence. No, when I went to the bathroom, I guess you guys changed the end time to 9? It hasn't been adopted yet, right?
Well, that's the standard, right? There's been a couple times where we're here late.
Last
time.
Yeah. Oh, no.
It's usually 9-ish.
When Rob was the chair, I was here till 11.
One time, I don't remember. It's usually a 9-ish thing.
Yeah.
August is coming.
Yeah. Well, he wanted to get the shortest meeting on record, which I had a question, so
I ruined that.
Okay. You tell me how you're feeling, if you want to stop here or you want to continue on. There's not much left that's changed.
How much do you have, yeah.
Okay, public hearing. That's pretty much the procedures I go by.
And this is all new?
I have to look at the old document to see if there was anything that I moved over, but it's written totally new. I think. Jazz music.
Like our jazz music.
Mm-hmm. So the big question that I got publicly was Bellevue's 5-minute, and I noted that here. 3 minutes. I think about most comments are 3 minutes and seem to get a lot across if you can do it. Be lenient for 30 seconds afterwards. I've learned if we have applicants to give them additional time, those are things that are not in here that maybe if I had the foresight to understand that, you know, if you think that's relevant, you know, to provide applicants additional time or something like that would be a thoughtful add. But any thought on changing 3, 4, 5 minutes for public comment?
Concern with the timing is that I think we get into an issue of equity, and there may actually be an issue that we cannot be preferential on one side or the other. And I would be curious what the RCWs and laws that are in place would say about that, or what attorneys would say about that in maintaining an equitable distribution. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. About where that comes down on the legal side.
Well, that's why I don't want to overcomplicate it. I'd rather just stick to one time frame. And,
I like the 5 minutes.
My hunch,
won't
speak that long, some will. Yeah, my hunch is that I think the attorneys will say you have some flexibility there, so I'll verify that, but that's my hunch. Because if it's 5 minutes for everyone, it's fair and equitable. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
sound like we get there often.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in the last one, there was many people that were a minute, minute and a half. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully. Yeah. So, okay. We're going to go 3 to 5, match Bellevue.
Three to five or five?
We're going to go to five. Strike three.
Three,
and
two, five. Got it.
And the second mention of three is also changing to five on the last sentence.
Yeah.
Sorry.
To be consistent, we want to also extend that to non-agenda items.
Do you?
Question for discussion.
I guess I'm still a little stuck on moving it to five. I don't want to cut people off, but I guess I would encourage being clear and concise. So I know if there's a hot topic that I personally had outside this meeting, it would be a struggle to get it at three, but I feel like you could probably do it if you prepare it ahead of time. So that's because I know there's creep like that all the time. So you said like kind of at a working level, you know, give three, maybe a 30-second buffer, you know, which might not write in here, but that's kind of like practically how it's went. So if we do five, then it's five and a half.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it just things, so I don't want to cut people off, but it just, it's going to add. It's not going to be right at five, no matter how good you are.
Yeah, that gets to be my pleasure. I'll say, I recall speaking on our land use when we got to city council, and I spoke about that. To speak about, it was our comprehensive plan, I think, that was on their agenda, and I spoke about land use, and I had 3 minutes. And I struggled where I typed it out, I practiced it, and I was over by 35 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just no way to get it any more concise down there. So I very knowledgeable on the subject, but to get everything I had to say was that much more difficult. But on the other side of that, I talked with, you know, kind of nonsense when we passed our change to the zoning around Trucktown. And I probably could have said what I said in 2 minutes, but I went over three. So, yeah, you're given and you might take, right? That's the general sense of it. It's up to us then to control that time.
So just for
I don't know if that helps.
On the other side of what you mentioned, most people, I think, or they have the opportunity at least to provide written comments, and so the verbal is kind of a clarification or a summary. It's not the generally not the only form of communication.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, we're not cutting them off in written form at all.
Yeah.
I mean, and we're not actually reducing.
Right.
So
you can always submit additional comments or all your comments in writing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'm just talking through this.
I guess to provide some perspective, the last meeting opened at 7:34 and closed at 8:58. In that amount of time, we had 36 speakers. So now we open that to longer time for each person.
Well, if it's 5 minutes, then I don't know if I would have made the decision to hold each one separately either.
Okay.
I made that with the understanding of what I would be able to talk about in 3 minutes and thinking that was not fair, so split it out that way.
Yeah.
So I think then my decision would have been differently. You know, so you wouldn't be allowed to speak so many times. Yes?
And then my comment on the allowing 5 minutes, though, is that I think at the level of city planning commission, city council, it is often an individual's only interaction with making these kind of comments. They're not necessarily going to be someone who is used to preparing something. They're usually coming to talk about something that they're passionate about or that they has direct personal meaning for them. And allowing them the opportunity to speak in a way that doesn't cut them off allows them being able to get that thought and that sense out to us. I don't see a lot of difference between 3 and 5 minutes in the overall. Now, admittedly, if we have 10 documents, that would get long. But in the typical public hearing, it's simply allowing citizens to have an ability to experience government in a way that I think is more respectful of their coming and spending time with us and sharing their thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in general sense, the 5 minutes isn't going to be an issue.
I will also clarify with our attorneys then if there's flexibility within that. So if we say 5, but yet it's our annual docket process and we have 20 dockets next year, can we set those ground rules ahead of time? And it's a special circumstance. This is the hearing. It's all laid out ahead of time. And do we have flexibility? That might be handy.
Or we split dockets and just hold 3 1
right.
Day
and yeah. Next. Yeah. If we had 15 or 20, I would hope we would do that.
Yeah. We'll divide it up. So we can work it. It's just, yeah, whatever the rules are, we can
right.
Work within them.
Right.
Okay. Hearing closed. Anything on conducting regular meetings? Nothing much changed there. Just renumbering. So then public hearings. I kept this in, and now that quasi-judicial and legislative matters were taken out by the attorney, for those that does anybody have any questions about quasi-judicial proceedings on the Planning Commission?
Can you explain that a little bit more fully?
So the way that our city administrator presented it to me was that we're not making a decision over a specific project. We are not a judge with a jury, and we have to hear everything in front of us. We are a Planning Commission that permits public input, whether it's in the supermarket or at our meetings, and we can bring those comments forward. And we don't act in any way like a judge in a jury system. And that is the definition of a quasi-judicial hearing. And that's kind of what a hearing examiner does. So that is basically taken out from our procedures as it should be. Now, ethically, in how we act in government, I asked back, how do I still have the appearance of fairness? So where our former chair was a real estate agent, right? Mm-hmm. Well, how do we know if he had financial interest in any of the properties that were being talked about? And the only way to do that is to ask a question, whether you're going to benefit financially or not. So I think we should still have something to that effect, just for guidance and for public fairness. That doesn't mean it's a quasi-judicial. It just means that we're an ethical commission to me. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on that?
I absolutely agree that that's necessary.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of interesting that that's a requirement. I forget what mm-hmm. course of training that we have to go to in the beginning. The
Open Public Meetings Act.
Right.
Open Public Records Meeting Act.
It's a requirement to make, to be forthcoming with any mm-hmm. Use yourself. Mm-hmm. If not, you're violation of ethics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this
this entire section that kind of relates to that is kind of struck out by the attorney, so I'm not going to even entertain putting it back in. I'm just going to say that if you feel that we should have some kind of question under appearance of fairness, and my suggestion is, do you benefit financially or not from this decision, would be the relevant one.
What's the difference between legality and
do we also, in just this sentence, I know all commissioners are
that's already state law that you're governed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's already been said.
You want more regulation?
Yeah, just look for this to be an informative document as well. Mm-hmm.
You could reference some of those. I mean, just a quick reference. That would lead people to more information that want it or aren't aware of it.
That would go under meetings to me.
Or membership.
Or commissioners are governed by,
membership and officers.
Yeah, membership and officers. Section 2.
I don't know how you phrase that. Certain state laws exist which govern.
Oh, I'm sure our attorneys could phrase it for you. Add to membership and what is it?
Membership and officers.
Officers.
Okay. So that's pretty much it for number 19. Nothing was changed in B, advanced preparation. The next page is something that I and Elizabeth have found very helpful when we have to do a public hearing. I have greatly beefed up this, and Elizabeth, did you get my Word version? I sent it when you were chairing the meeting?
Yes.
Okay. Since I updated these procedures back in October, obviously I've done some work. Now looking at them, I might want to maybe enhance this, but I have to go back and look at my procedures that I've typed out that give me kind of guidance. I think they're in line. They're just maybe I put together something that is more detailed in the procedures. So it just helps whoever's going to take over chair. If you vote me out next May.
Okay. I think it's March.
March?
Yeah, March.
Oh, did we already pass that? You know, I did this in October with the thought that this would happen this May.
Did I miss the vote where I am still vice chair and you guys didn't realize
that? That's why you're still vice chair.
No,
I'm vice chair.
But it says 2 years.
That's why you never miss a meeting.
The election happens in March.
Sorry. I didn't realize it would take this long.
You weren't here either when we voted you in.
No one was here. No.
Sorry. I'm very aspirational and thought these would fly right through because they're just planning commission procedures.
Well, I will confirm our review process if it has a hearing or if it goes, I mean, I know it will go to council, but what the format is. So depending on that, if we need to have a hearing, then we might skip next meeting and then do the hearing and re-review. So that would give you more time to plug in edits. But we have the rest of yours, and then...
Jamie, maybe we could set up some time, you and I just go over, and so I can share some of the workload.
Yeah.
Tell you what I'll do.
Yeah. And I can get a lot of these answers on Tuesday from attorneys, and that'll give me direction and get them involved, too.
So our next meeting is the 22nd of June, where we'll have some more dockets, and then... what else is on our agenda for the 22nd? Any knowledge on that? Are we getting Cottage back?
Oh, I do have your schedule. Uh-huh. It's going to be shared with the committee on Tuesday. So it's, and I'll tell you guys, it's a secret. Permitted use chart. So the CED committee will finish on Tuesday the 13th. They have a meeting. They're going to finish their look at, they looked at every use in every zone, and they have some recommendations.
Some, Jamie, prepare us properly.
Some. No. No? Nothing's going to really scare you.
Okay.
So, Tuesday, they are providing us the recommendation for the neighborhood business zone and maybe some associated performance standards. So, the big question being, do we want to see residential in the neighborhood business and where? And what does that affect? So the neighborhood business, the permitted uses, let's see, but for you guys, well, we said we'd be done with the procedures next meeting, but we'll see how the scheduling and review goes. And then a possible public hearing then would happen in July, depending on those changes to the neighborhood business zone, those dockets. Mm-hmm. If it's something different than the approach we've been taking, or there's more to it, we would want to re-notice that for the neighborhood business. So that would be in July. And we would also probably have a public hearing for those permitted uses, changes to the chart in July. That would be the 13th. And then we go back to cottage housing, some other code amendments related to some interim regulations, and yeah, we pretty much have you scheduled out through the end of the year. So I will bring that to the next meeting once we verify that with committee and get their input.
Would you kindly just put a note on there that the Planning Commission would still like to know when about we'd get our transportation plan?
Okay. I had just a comment on the final one on our procedures.
Yes.
Maybe you just look at the public hearing section when you look at it, because there's just a title, like public hearings, and then conducting public hearings, public hearing procedure, and then detailed public hearing procedures. So just look for, I'm sure there's a lot of good information. I have a feeling it has to be overlapped with all of.
Yeah, it was that way because of the quasi-judicial and legislative ones. I agree, and I put a note to rework that, that there's too much. And conducting public hearings, and public hearings will be one section.
And, you know, if you want to have, under public hearings, you just put the detailed public hearing there and just, you know, maybe just put the detail right there, rather than having, like, a public hearings overview and then really detailed version.
Well, one is just kind of general guidance. The other one is what the chair is going to refer to. So that's why I want them totally separate. A different form. I got you.
It is how people process information. So, yeah. Yes. For me, I would have it the other way. But,
it does fall under, maybe not.
Just when it's all together, you can just, that's all.
Yeah.
Maybe take a look at that. Okay.
But I will be moving for sure the other section.
We don't have to show that as a track change either. Might be. Clarified a little.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, thank you, Jamie, for the update on our schedule. That's
yes.
Very helpful.
I'll write it in writing next time.
Also, we didn't hear about, and it was leaked in our last packet, the SEPA updates. SEPA thresholds and the sign regulations. And, of course, the sign regulations have been put off because we didn't want to have... Maybe we should do that before we change our public testimony time to 5 minutes. So, anyway,
yes.
So what's going on with those? Are they
yes.
going to get introduced to us?
You know, we did not have SEPA on the remainder of this year. We had a potential for shoreline critical area regulation, but I think we are checking with to see if we made some amendments to our floodplain regulations and if that transfers to those sections or not. We do have tree regulations, I think, coming back probably before SEPA. And SEPA is one of those that it's not to have less regulation. There are a few thresholds like... that have changed slightly, and there we have discretion to, you know, go with our SEPA exemptions somewhat to pick and choose. I mean, we don't have to go less than we have now, but if there's some that make sense or some that are more stringent, I mean, we'll look at the whole package. So, but we don't have a schedule for that yet. There's nothing pressing. If anything, you know, there's some, one example that's come up with the wastewater treatment plant, the size of the pipe. And if it's a certain size, it triggers a SEPA, where if it's a little bit smaller, it doesn't. And so, worst case, we're having to do an extra SEPA for a pipe that we may not have to. So there hasn't been a large impact.
We want a pipe that flows freely.
Right. Right. So the tree regulations, sun regulations that don't have on the schedule either, but those are things I can verify with committee on Tuesday and see.
So
if
maybe they just got put in our packet as part of the talking process. We didn't need to see that.
So that was carryover from like you said, we've been talking about it for a while. We know that, and we've made some changes in our code to different zones, like downtown commercial zone is a little different, and that's in the design standards versus the sign regulations. It's just a big thing to open up. The trees will be too, but it's just a matter of priority. So we have electric charging stations. That's been brought up as something maybe to look at, to add that in as required in new homes. But before that, in August, we were going to be bringing back the interim regulations for Tanner Landing and Tanner Junction. And Lynn still has to bring back the wireless facilities in July. So
yes,
there's a lot to do, as you guys know.
It's scary.
Long meetings, lots to do, so we'll get it.
Wireless facilities is scary how long it's been away, and
yeah.
Shudder to think how many pages it is now.
Yeah. I don't think it's growing just because it's away, I think.
Oh, she said it grew. Okay, good of the order. Jamie, it's been a mm-hmm. while since we got our buildable lands report. And while I understand that the CED committee was the general audience, the Planning Commission was enjoying those reports, and it gave us insight into how the zones were actually being developed as it related to what we were zoning. And I think it's a useful tool, not just as an insight. And I didn't necessarily want us to be asking about, like, the how many of, you know, or where projects are, but just to understand how the zones are developing. So is it easier if I send an email to Jenna to get that back? Or
are you talking buildable lands report or building activity? Building activity. Yes, I would send that request, and you can CC all of us, staff, and yeah.
Awesome. Anybody mm-hmm. else? Go to the order.
Just comments on noxious weeds around North Bend. One of them is along North Bend Way by the Public Works building. There's a bunch of knotweed that's just off the right of way. So I think it would be ideal to treat that patch, especially where there is yard waste. I know it's like probably would not get mixed in, but it could. I don't know if the maintenance crew, if that's a North Bend crew that mows that, but if they get too close and they start cutting mm-hmm. stems and start spreading it, it could regrow somewhere else, or if they take that and don't
right.
Switch out the bags, then they could be spreading
right.
it. So I think it's a best practice to get rid of that. That's just a comment.
Do we have a list of noxious weeds that are controlled within our city?
No, I don't think so.
Probably have to go to King County website.
Well, there's a lot, and there's some that are required to be controlled, and there's some that are not required to be controlled.
Right.
And what Scott's talking about, there is a huge effort between the Greenway and King County
mm-hmm.
to get rid of knotweed.
Right. It's usually along river corridors. That's been their focus. Then you get these little spots that come up.
It's not required in that location.
Right.
But, like I said, it's a best practice.
Yeah. Okay, I'll have to look into what resources we can get the city to do that, because I know it usually has to be injected, and it's not just like a weedy, you don't want to do that, so.
Yeah, it would be herbicide that you use. The other one is, it's just related to, I guess, developments in the, I think it's the Tanner Flats, or Tanner Falls,
mm-hmm.
where there's a big soil mound, and it looked like it was supposed to be revegetated, and there was grass on it, and now there's just Scotch broom on it. So just kind of like neglect of a project can contribute in that way. And again, that's not a required species to treat there, but it doesn't.
Well, I think, Scott, what you're getting to is grading and clearing without development time frames. And because Scotch broom is popping up on all these sites, is there a document that we can go over that talks about the clearing and grading and development time frames requirements?
Right. Well, I can specifically speak to both of those sites, the John Day, his Tanner pit right there, mm-hmm. and then also the pit behind. Those are actually both in process developments. There was a preliminary plat. So John's still just bringing the site up, and once he gets the site up, he's going in for his plat and full engineering. That's actually going to be converted to a park. It's what that big mound you see, everything will be brought up to that level and become a park. And then on the backside of Tanner Road, there will also be a full development there. So I can at least speak to those two projects. And the clear and grade standards and site stabilization, the primary focus is to first get the hydro seed on, and just to make sure that any turbid runoff or anything doesn't get off site, and any sedimentation. For long-term restoration, obviously we have the hotel that's gone way over schedule. Nobody likes a site to sit unfinished. So if we do anticipate that a site is going to get brought to a certain point and then remain unfinished for a while, we do like to see a little more aggressive of restoration and planting plans. But that's just not always the case. Sometimes they just stop.
Thanks, Mike. That's very helpful.
Yeah, I mean, those weed seeds will be in the soil for, that's a
Scotch
long lasting
80.
Yeah, I mean, up to 80, 30, 40 years. So that park is going to have a long-term problem. I mean, I know it's gravelly soils, and there is Scotch broom around, of course. Look out Trucktown, along North Bend Way. So it's mm-hmm. not like it's not present nearby, but was it present in that area? I don't know if it was. I think it was just gravel, so it's been introduced from...
Mm-hmm.
Which is just, I don't know, but through...
When it was a pasture, there was a couple of Scotch broom plants in there, but there wasn't the level.
Yeah.
I would, actually, if you come by the office sometime, these are projects that are active right now, so that's something we can certainly review.
Yeah.
If there's a way to amend the soil or something mm-hmm. like that, if that's of concern.
I don't know what you would do now, to be honest. I'd have to think about it.
Or just let me know,
yeah.
especially if we do have a reclamation site like that.
Especially
in our EP zones, there are right. sites that may be mm-hmm. very prime candidates for that.
Yeah. And like you said, the projects are taking longer than we anticipated. I think we have that authority too.
I mean, I think if, thinking back on it, you had that grass there, and then, if you knew it wasn't going to do anything, like just flip the soil or something,
mm-hmm.
and then grass again or something. I don't know off the top of my head, but...
Okay.
Leaving it idle is not good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Anything else?
I had a question on what product are we using? I don't know if Public Works is the gentleman I saw the other day in town spraying. What are the products that we're using? Are we using Roundup, or are we using something regular?
I honestly don't know. I can ask somebody down
okay.
at the shops what we're using.
So on my mind.
Along the edges of the rib?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sorry in town, that this particular owner has mentioned or commented to me that she was concerned. So
mm-hmm.
she has a little pea patch out there, and her kids are there. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, we should put like our spraying plan online that might impact property, right? Or something like that. I know King County sometimes provides notice along the Middle Fork when they're going to do spraying. Maybe see what they do, and maybe we can model it. All right.
Well, I would like to thank the Planning Commission for not only tracking all the public comments and the written comments that came through, just for your time and your dedication to doing this work. So thank you very much. Thank you, Mike, for taking your time out of your busy day and adding some additional hours to help us out on the Planning Commission with your expertise. It's greatly appreciated. Jamie, it's always great to see you. Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Planning Commission is adjourned at 10:01.
Wow.